like it's a
write a letter.
Lobbyist.
We have a couple of items of business before we start the official calendar of the City Council meeting this morning. One, just a brief employee recognition. We like to get these, and I just want to mention it. I don't know if Michael Reed is here, but we have a team of people that work with the State Land Board in dealing with complicated permitting issues in the river. And this is just a statement of appreciation and a citation from the State Land Board giving our Portland Streamlining team an award. Here's what the governor said: praised this team for their cooperative multi-agency approach to waterway permitting. Their work results in a more streamlined process, less time spent on resolving issues, and better outcomes for applicants and the regulatory agencies. So just a moment of thanks for good work being done by our staff in multiple city bureaus working with the state, doing complicated work that nevertheless still has to translate into the real world for people that are getting permits. So bravo, well done, and thank you for good work. Now with, let's hear it. With that, we have a proclamation this morning, and Commissioner Fish is queued up and ready to proceed with it.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Before I read the proclamation, I'd like to invite our special guests up this morning. Chief Operating Officer of the Portland Thorns, Mike Golub, Head Coach Cindy Parlow-Cohn, and two of the stars of our new women's professional soccer team, the great Canadian striker Christine Sinclair and the great UP pilot Danny Foxhoven. Let's welcome our two stars. Before I read the proclamation, I just want to acknowledge that the two players that are with us this morning, Mayor and colleagues, are graduates of the University of Portland. And we're joined today by Head Coach Garrett Smith and Lisa Chambers and members of the pilot family. They are respectively number 1 and 4 in scoring in the history of UP. Danny Foxhoven last year achieved even greater acclaim when she won a Portland Spirit Award for the volunteer service at Harper's Playground. Christine Sinclair is currently number 3 all-time in the world as a striker in goals scored, and someday people think she may even overtake Mia Hamm. We are blessed with great players and a great new franchise, and we're celebrating their arrival here in Portland today. And it's my honor to read the proclamation. Whereas the United States National Women's Soccer League was officially launched in November of 2012, and whereas the City of Portland is honored to welcome our very own professional women's team, the Portland Thorns FC, to the Rose City, and whereas on April 13, 2013, the Thorns will play their season opening match against FC Kansas City, and whereas they will play their first season home match at Jeld-Wen Field on April 21, 2013, against the Seattle Reign, and whereas the Portland Thorns include world-class athletes from the U.S. Women's National Team, the Canadian National Team, and the University of Portland Pilots, and whereas Portland's passion for soccer at the recreation, youth, adult, club, high school, college, and professional level has earned us a national reputation as Soccer City USA, and whereas members of the Portland Thorns are an inspiration to young athletes across America, including the more than 10,000 youth soccer players here in Portland, serving as role models on and off the pitch. Now, therefore, I, Charlie Hales, the mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, and Soccer City USA, do hereby proclaim Wednesday, April 10th, 2013, to be a day of recognition for Portland Thorns FC in Portland and to encourage all residents to observe this day. Congratulations. Mike, you want to start us off?
Sure. Thank you very much, Commissioner and Mayor and Commissioner Fritz. We are deeply honored to be here today and for the recognition we have received. When this league was forming, we knew we had to bring a franchise to Portland. We knew it would be a huge success. And while this last few months for all of us involved with the Thorns have been kind of crazy, we are poised to have one of the most successful launches of any women's professional team ever. We expect more than 14,000 people at our home opener on the 21st at Jeld-Wen Field. And one of the things we knew we had to get right was getting the right head coach, and we did that. This woman next to me, Cindy Cohn, world-class player, has played in two World Cups, has coached at a very high level, and is well on her way to being a world-class coach. So, Cindy?
Welcome, Coach.
Thank you. Well, first and foremost, I need...
I think I do.
There we go. Very nice.
But we're so excited to be here. I got here in mid-January, and Portland has just opened up their arms to me and to our team, and it's just been so exciting to see. We had our preseason match at the University of Portland, and the fans were just incredible. They were packed. I think the Portland Thorns were a little bit taken aback by the reception that they received going into so-called enemy land. I think the fans were a little bit confused about who to cheer for because they were cheering for both teams. But it was such a great experience, and we couldn't be more excited to be here in Portland and to represent the Portland Thorns and the city of Portland very well. And these are two of our fantastic players that you guys will be so proud to get to know better and better.
Well, welcome, and we'll start with the Canadian Olympian, Christine Sinclair. Welcome.
Me? Firstly, I'd just like to say that I'm so excited to finally be back playing soccer here in Portland. From my time at the University of Portland, I know the fans here are the best in the country, and I can't wait to get back out there and play in front of them. You know, the last time I represented a team from Portland, we won a national championship. And
yeah, let's we hear a go, Pilots.
We'd like another one, please.
Exactly, and I know a championship is what this organization is after, but I also think, more importantly, we're out to start a new soccer tradition here in the city, and we just can't wait for the season to start, so thank you.
Christine, for all of your fans out there, not only for those of us who had a chance to watch you win two national championships, but I think equally proud for this community was when you won two awards as the top soccer player in America in your college years, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
And another pilot and budding star, Danny Foxhoven. Danny, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, there's a little button on the
there's
bottom.
There's a little button.
There we go.
We upgraded our technology, which means it doesn't
there
work
we go.
Anymore.
Yeah, that's working. I think they said it all. I'm so humbled and honored to be a part of this organization and in the new league. I'm so excited about it. I think Portland has, like we've said, the best fans in the country, maybe in the world, for women's soccer, and I truly feel so excited to be a part of that and you know, make this first season something to remember. So thank you.
Yes. Before we take a picture, Mike, you've sold something like 6,000 season tickets already?
7,000.
7,000. Wow. And how does that compare to the other teams in the league?
We don't know exactly. For those of you who don't know, there are 8 teams, including us, around the league, and all off to a very good start. Boston, New York, Chicago, Kansas City, Western New York. We're going to lead the league in attendance by far. But
you left out Seattle.
And Seattle.
They're going to be a footnote. They'll be a footnote someday.
And we'll be here all week, the two of us. Yeah.
Mike, the other thing I think we want to congratulate you on is that at a time when it's harder and harder for families to find accessible, affordable family entertainment, you've priced your tickets at a level that makes it affordable for families in Portland, and we're grateful for that.
Thank you.
Can we get a picture?
May I just make some remarks? Because when I was growing up in England watching football, girls didn't play football. And now you are taking soccer to a whole new level. And it was so entertaining to watch your game at UP. I'm very much looking forward, as a season ticket holder, to watching you every single game. And like the Timbers Army, we are blessed with an alliance of fans who came up with this scarf. I'm well known for wearing many scarves. Have I got it the right way? No, wrong way up. By any other name? From Shakespeare, of course, so I'm not going to put on my official Timbers scarf. So they're now the Rose City Riveters, and they'll be cheering you on, and the whole city wants you to do well and hopes that you really enjoy your time here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The only thing I'd add is just, in addition to being a fan for the Timbers and now the Thorns, I'm a dad, and my kids grew up here in Portland playing soccer, and both my sons and my daughter. And now that there's a path from that first kick and chase all the way to the professional league for both men and women, I think is a great day for Oregon, a great day for Portland, and a great day for sport. So congratulations, and we're really looking forward to your season.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll get a quick tip.
Okay, everything else is going to be anticlimax after that. But we've got some other good things on the council calendar today, so we will get to that. I'm going to call the April 10th meeting of the Portland City Council to order. Clerk, please call the roll.
Fish
here.
Saltzman, Novick, Fritz
here.
Hales
here. Commissioner Novick is away on city business, and Commissioner Saltzman will be arriving a little late this morning, so we'll actually hold consent calendar until he arrives, and we'll have the quorum that's required for that. Let's go ahead with our communications items, please.
Item 301, request of Craig Mosbeck to address council regarding fluoridation.
Mosbeck, come on up. Good morning. Welcome.
Morning. My name is Craig Mosbeck. Thank you, Mayor Hales, members of City Council, for listening to me this morning. I'd like to say I'm a Portland resident. I'm one of the 7,000 season ticket holders with the Portland Thorns, and I also work as a consultant in the area of public health. So I very much appreciate that the City of Portland is taking steps to improve the health of all city residents, from offering more nutritious foods in city parks to working with businesses on worksite wellness, to improving health equity and ensuring the health and safety of our drinking water. I'm volunteering my time to encourage a yes vote on the measure to fluoridate water in Portland. I'm lucky to have lived in Portland for the past 30 years, but for my teeth, I'm lucky that I spent the first 18 years in another state. As a child, I drank fluoridated water, and I didn't have to think about my dental health, and I never had a cavity growing up.
No, hey, no, no, please.
Hey, lobbyist, hey. Upstream.
Excuse me, no, not in this chamber. Not in this chamber. For you, not for you or for anyone else will we tolerate interruptions. Please. Go ahead, sir.
Sure. My daughter was not so fortunate. At 4 years old, she had cavities in half her teeth, and she needed a baby root canal. I remember that day when the dentist worked on her decayed teeth. She was lucky in one sense in that we had dental insurance and could pay for this work. But thousands of kids like her are still suffering needlessly from not having fluoridated water. In the local area, 1 in 5 kids suffers from untreated tooth decay, and that's 40% higher than Seattle, which has fluoridated water. Among the 50 biggest cities in the U.S., only 2 do not fluoridate the water, Portland currently and Wichita, Kansas. Every major national health organization recommends water fluoridation as a safe and cost-effective method for reducing tooth decay. Supporters of fluoridation include the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the American Dental Association. In Portland, over 85 public health and social justice organizations have endorsed fluoridation. The only way we are going to get a handle on reducing healthcare costs is through prevention. Fluoridation has one of the best returns on investment. For every dollar we spend on fluoridation, we'll save $38 in dental care costs. I want to encourage all Portlanders to vote yes on fluoridation on the May ballot. Thank you for your time this morning, and thank you for your continued leadership on health.
Thanks. Thanks for coming. Next one, please, Carla.
Item 302, request of Arthur King to address council regarding the Office of Neighborhood Involvement.
Morning, Mr. King. Welcome.
Looks like I picked
the right color shirt today.
Just put your name in the record and you have 3 minutes.
Oh, okay. I'm Arthur King. I'm a resident of the Mount Scott Arleta neighborhood in Southeast Portland, and I'm here to sing the praises of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Recently, we had a surge in graffiti and vandalism in our area. We've had couches dumped and things like that. And I reached out to our neighborhood association to find out what could we do about it. They, in turn, steered me to the Department of Graffiti Abatement, part of ONI. I've worked extensively with Ms. Dennis there, and we've reported and resolved several issues of tagging in the neighborhood, and I've also seen a reduction in graffiti around certain hotspots in the area. More than that kind of service, though, ONI also provides education to us, so giving the neighbors the ability to help themselves. For example, we worked with Brad Taylor, and he met with the neighbors in order to organize a neighborhood foot patrol. We've had two successful outings so far. Our third is tonight. And he taught us not only to be safe ourselves when we're out on patrol, but also how to be safe when we're interacting with our neighbors, and also how to work with the police effectively, how to report, how to record, and also how just not to get underfoot when we're out there patrolling. So I know that budgets are tight, and I know that cost-cutting is going on, but I urge the council to be rather lenient when it comes to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, because not only do they provide services that help keep our neighborhood safer and cleaner, but also provide education and the tools to help our neighbors help themselves in order to be more effective, and thus, I think, in the long term, saving the city money. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. And pretty impressed by what your neighborhood association with Sarah Iannarone and other volunteers have done to transform that neglected piece of public right-of-way at 72nd and Woodstock into a great public space. So
yeah,
nice piece of volunteer work there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming. Yeah, good work. Good work. Okay, next one, please.
Item 303, request of Joni Belden to address council regarding the trail and giant sequoia at Chimney and Pier Parks.
Good morning. Welcome.
May we request that we sit together and flip the order of our presentation because they both
have to do
the same
thing. Oh, I see you're both signed up.
Thing.
Sure, you're both signed up. You can go in whichever order you'd
Thank
like.
You.
I'll do 304. Request of Chris Fountain to address council regarding the trail off the Chimney Pier Park Bridge and the giant Sequoia Grove.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Council people. My name is Chris Fountain, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the trees in the giant Sequoia Grove in Pier Park. Since we learned that a giant sequoia was to be cut down to make room for a 65-foot ADA-compliant trail section to be built off the south end of the new Pier Chimney Park Bridge, we've been concerned about negative impacts on the giant sequoia grove that were not anticipated during previous years of planning. Why didn't we object to the cutting of the tree or the alignment of the 65-foot section before February of this year? The simple answer is that we didn't know about either. There was never any notice in Pier Park informing park users of grove impacts. The cover letter on the Chimney Pier Bridge webpage never mentions grove impacts. Friends of Pier Park never discussed grove impacts, or if they did, the discussion didn't make it into their minutes. We trusted parks to honor their mission statement of establishing, safeguarding, and restoring the parks, natural areas, public places, and urban forest of the city, ensuring that these are accessible to all. In this case, we've been disappointed. Please refer to the timeline of one example of misrepresentation pages in your folders. These sheets outline just one example of how important facts impacting Grove were not part of the public process. Despite telling us multiple times that the public had been included in the decision to cut the sequoia, as well as how the 65-foot section would impact the Grove, parks recently admitted that this was not true. There has also been much rhetoric about the fact that the 65-foot section is what makes the bridge ADA compliant and that its inclusion was required in order to have the project funded. Until this trail becomes a part of a complete trail through Pier Park, this 65 feet is not ADA compliant because it is not accessible from Pier Park. If ODOT considers a dead-end 65-foot trail section a compliant ADA trail, this is an insult to the ADA community. Parks has repeatedly stated that there are no plans to build a continuation of this section for many years. In Pier Park, there is a history of starting ADA projects that were never finished. Although an ADA restroom was scheduled to be built at Bruce and James in 1996, it has never been funded. Park says the trail has not been designed. There is no funding at this time to continue to work on the trail. Yet I assume that the trail alignment sketched on the North Portland Greenway section, please see the plan in your packet, which is billed as ADA compliant, played a part in the funding decision. As drawn, this trail goes through a dense section of the sequoia, making this alignment impossible without cutting down more sequoia. Yet we are told no more trees will be cut. When, if ever, will true ADA accessibility to the bridge become a reality, or will we just be stuck with an ugly asphalt slab that was built for one purpose only, to meet ODOT requirements for the bridge funding? Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Joni Belden, and I live in St. John's next to Pier Park. I'm a daily walker in the park. Myself and other concerned citizens hired Terry Flanagan, an ISA-certified master arborist, to come to the Sequoia Grove to give an independent professional opinion about the Pier Chimney Bridge project as it relates to the Sequoia's long-term health. He had a copy of PPNR's design plans and tree protection plan. You have a copy of his report in your packet. Please read it in full. At the St. John's Neighborhood Association meeting, PPNR's urban forester did not refute any of the report's findings. The report identifies two main areas of concern. And there was a design plan in your packet as well. Number one, during the construction of the bridge, damage may be caused to the trees that line the gravel road that is to be used for access to the project. Two, the ADA-compliant 65-foot paved trail off the bridge dead-ends into the Sequoia Grove, a straight shot from the bridge that invites bridge users to enter the grove off-trail, causing soil compaction and damage to surface roots, leading over time to potential decline of the sequoias. For long-term tree health, Mr. Flanagan recommends that the ADA trail be completed through the grove as part of the bridge project. We have another concern. The Sequoia Grove is planted in two sections, front and back. The front section trees are planted in a circle. The planned ADA trail lands in the middle of this circle and, when continued, will need to go through several sets of trees. PPNR stated they never considered any alternative direction for the ADA trail. We believe there's a viable alternative directing the trail between the two sections, keeping both intact, and minimizing the number of trees affected. Since no public input was ever solicited concerning the ADA trail, we are asking that our input now be given serious consideration. We ask that, one, PPNR follows the recommendations in Mr. Flanagan's report. Two, alternative directions for the ADA trail be given thorough consideration and, if viable, replace the current planned trail, simply redirecting the trail. Three, the ADA accessible trail through Pier Park to the bridge should be designed in its entirety with no harm to any trees. It should be completed at the same time as the construction of the bridge. The public needs to be involved in the trail design process. Four, construction begin on the Chimney Park side to allow adequate time for concerted study and possible redesign of the Pier Park ADA trail. And five, a way to prevent off-trail use must be designed for any uncompleted ADA trail. Portland's a city of trees, and I hope that it will share this concern for maintaining the health of the Sequoia Grove.
Thank you both very much for bringing this to us in a very organized way. Obviously, we'll be following up with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Appreciate those. And I think we're now ready to move on to...
One more communication.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Leaving off Ms. Lee. Sorry.
Item 305, request of Jenna Lee to address council regarding the Economic Opportunity Initiative Microenterprise Program.
Good morning, Ms. Lee. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Just state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. Thanks. Yes, my name is Jenna Lee, and I am a co-owner of a small business called Articoli Incorporated. We make neon. We make all kind of sign, manufacture and install sign located at 8621 Southeast Powell Boulevard in Portland. And we've been there for about 13 years, and we're still there, regardless of many years up and down, downturn of economy. We fortunately work with PDC and in 2007 get the program, Storefront Improvement Program grant, which have a lot to our business. And lately, electronic world got to be seen online in order to get more sale. So PDC refer us to the ERGO and the EOI program to help us as far as small business development program. So the ERGO technical service specialist recognized what needed for us to, and benefit us to continue the business. They refer us to volunteer specialist website. Her name is Elena Bernard, the professor of marketing, working in marketing department of Portland State University. And she very helpful to come to our shop and help us to rebuild our website to make it more functional and also reactivate our domain name, things like that. And lately, after 1 year working with a website online and to be seen on Google, my phone's ringing very, very often. That is very good sign and very good feeling to have to get more work from that. Very big help and very grateful about the assistance that the PDC and the partner provider. So I would like to very respectfully to ask you, the council, to continue to support us as far as small business and to continue funding for the later years. That's all. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking the time to come in.
Yeah, appreciate it. Nice to hear how it works.
All right.
Thank you.
Nice to know that most of the signs that we see on a regular basis were done by your company.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Congratulations, including Whole Foods and Thai restaurants and State Farm Insurance and Nike. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. All right. Now let's move to, we can't move to consent account, can't move to the consent calendar yet because we don't have a quorum, so let's take up the time certain item number 306.
Adopt the framework, A Home for Everyone, a United Community Plan to End Homelessness in Portland, Multnomah County.
Mr. Fish?
Thank you, Mayor. We're now going to shift from all-star soccer to all-star housing.
Nice.
We have two matters that are before council today. One is to seek council's approval for a reset framework that's been hammered out by the city and the county. And there's a companion item authorizing an investment of $3.1 million in a LifeWorks development in Inner Northeast. So first, I'd like to welcome our panel, Tracy Manning, the director of the Portland Housing Bureau, Mary Lee of Multnomah County's Department of County Human Services. Welcome, Mary.
Thanks.
And Steve Rubman, who I just met. Steve is executive director of Home Forward, Multnomah County's Housing Authority. Welcome to all of you. Mayor and colleagues, the team at the Portland Housing Bureau has been doing some impressive big-picture thinking over the past couple of years on a range of issues. On tax abatements, which we worked with the county and other partners to reform last year. On asset management and a toolkit, you might remember it as POP, which they brought to council last year. And today, an update of the city and county's plan to end homelessness. In December of 2004, the city and the county approved a really path-breaking policy called Home Again, the 10-year plan to end homelessness, which was our community's joint strategy to fight homelessness. The plan focused on resource-intensive populations, mostly chronically homeless adult men and women. At the time, national research told us that this group, while just about 10 to 15% of the total homeless population, was consuming more than 50% of our community's crisis resources. And the idea was that by serving some of the hardest to house people, we would free up money to invest in less resource-intensive groups. That was that was the concept. What we ultimately found, of course, was that the savings to the larger system, the county jail, the emergency room at Providence Hospital, and elsewhere, didn't necessarily result in more funding for homeless services. Despite that, we have a number of notable successes as a community to celebrate. We've strengthened partnerships with the county, with businesses, and with the faith community, understanding that when we all link arms, we can do great things. We opened Bud Clark Commons, the nationally known award-winning cornerstone of our 10-year plan. We're using resources more efficiently and effectively, and the short-term rent assistance program is a great example, and you'll be hearing more about that later. And most importantly, as a community, we've moved more than 12,000 homeless households, families, and individuals from our streets to permanent homes, and that is quite an accomplishment. Now, over the last few years, we have weathered the worst recession in our lifetime, a recession that is pushing more individuals and families into homelessness than we could possibly have foreseen. And our struggle continues. But over the past 8 years, we've learned a lot about what works and what doesn't, and about who we serve well and not so well. And for more than a year, a broad group of community stakeholders representing government, business, nonprofits, and faith has been reevaluating our plan with an eye towards refreshing it based on lessons learned. Today, we celebrate the successful conclusion of that effort, and we look ahead beyond the formal end of the 10-year plan that was launched in 2004. At the conclusion of today's presentation, Council will be asked to approve the committee's recommended framework and to authorize them to start crafting an implementation plan. Before I recognize Director Manning, I just have one comment about the concept of a 10-year plan. A 10-year plan, in my view, is a misnomer. And we were stuck with that moniker because it was a condition of receiving federal money. Every city that sought federal money had to develop what was called a 10-year plan. And without in any way diminishing our success and the hard work of the people you're going to hear from today, I will tell you in candor that no one thought we could end homelessness in 10 years. But what we hope we do is make a hell of a dent. And I think we've shown that with a new and creative way and collaborative approach, we've been able to accomplish that. So with that, I will introduce Steve Rudman. Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, Mayor, Council. It's great to be here. I'm Steve Rudman, Executive Director of Home Forward. We are the housing authority for Portland, Multnomah County, and the city of Gresham. And Nick spoke everything I was going to say. However, I will add a couple of pieces here because I think it really is important. But first, we really want to appreciate your support and the councils before you. And during the time of the 10-year plan, Portland and Multnomah County in particular have shown, you know, great leadership in trying to reduce and prevent homelessness in our community. And it's been very challenging. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the first 10-year plan and successes. Mary will talk about why we did the reset. And Tracy will talk a little bit about the next steps and recommendations. As Nick mentioned, in 2004, in December, we launched the 10-year plan. It really was a wide, broad effort led by the city and county and Home Forward with extensive public involvement from our rich array of community nonprofits, members of the private sector, and the faith community. Guided by three basic principles, focus on the most chronically homeless people, partner to streamline access to services to prevent and reduce homelessness, and finally, to fund programs with measurable results. There was some irony here is that the federal government required states and communities to complete these 10-year plans. At the same time, federal funding support for affordable housing was seriously diminished. Our challenges were significant locally. Clearly, there was funding gaps. And indeed, this is the period of time where the city of Portland and Multnomah County, you know, dug deep into general fund discretionary and actually began supporting more and more some of the most vulnerable in our community. It was a big challenge to coordinate different programs on different services and with different populations across several jurisdictions. But there were a lot of successes. And as Nick mentioned, over 12,000 people transitioned into homes. About 40% of the households were families, 15% were youth, 23% were chronically homeless singles, and about 21% of the households were escaping domestic violence. We did work together to create and reduce administrative costs by combining a bunch of multiple funding sources, the city, county, and home forward controlled, federal, state, local, about $4 to $5 million a year into what we call the Short-Term Rent Assistance Program, or STRAW. It definitely is an effective program that's helped thousands of families and individuals avoid eviction and helps people move from the streets into permanent homes. It's given us an opportunity to transcend systems and jurisdictions into one program, no matter which jurisdiction is providing funding and which population is being served. And the way it kind of works is 19 community agencies, both geographically and culturally specific, case managers there work with the households and actually affix the appropriate source of funds to their needs. Outcomes are tracked, and they have remained consistently strong over the life of STRAW. The average length of assistance is only about 3 months, with an average household assistance about $2,000. Despite this lower level, 78% of the households assisted remain stable 12 months after the end of the funding. Important to realize, though, that the metric here is housing stability. People are still in their homes. It is not housing affordability. Nick also mentioned that our community built and is operating the landmark Bud Clark Commons, an award-winning development that has a day center for homeless and formerly homeless people to access services, transitional men's shelter, and 130 units of housing for our most vulnerable homeless individuals. And those individuals are now connected to both primary and behavioral health resources. We've also used our efforts locally to leverage state and federal dollars. And one of the most notable examples is through leadership efforts by Commissioner Fish in the city and Commissioner McKeel and Kefori in the county is the utilization of the VASH vouchers for homeless vets. It's about working with the VA. We're very close now because of community support to housing all 305 vets that we have vouchers for. In closing, I just want to reinforce Home Forward's commitment to continue to address priorities of our partner jurisdictions. Our community here has done a lot to address homeless, but there's like so much more to do, particularly in today's era of ever-shrinking federal resources combined with increasing local need. It is a daunting challenge, and we have to redouble our efforts and be creative and bold. The recommendation for some shared stewardship and governance promises to be an important step along this path, and we look forward to the emergence of this new model. Thanks.
Welcome, Mary.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning. Mary Lee from Multnomah County, and I want to start by bringing greetings from both Commissioner Deborah Kefori, Chair Jeff Kogan, and the rest of our board. They could not be here this morning, but send their salutations and appreciation for our partnership. It's lovely to be here this morning with my two fearless compatriots here, but also to be a part of the agenda that's happened this morning, because I feel like it's part and parcel of our community, right, and the democratic process for her to be here. And the section that I'm talking about in terms of why we did a reset is very simple. It's posing to ourselves and to our community the question about what kind of community do we want to be? Are we the community that takes care of our friends, neighbors, and families when they're in need, or a community that waits and hopes for the best? And the simple answer to that is the reset plan that you have in front of you today, which is our answer to, yes, we are a community that does not wait and hope. We are a community that looks at how to take action and how to be better and do better for on behalf of our friends and neighbors and community folks who do not have a home. So about a year ago, I think it has been said, Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Kefori came and charged us with the responsibility of taking a look at the current 10-year plan to end homelessness and really asking ourselves some hard questions. What have we learned about what works? What have we learned about what didn't work so well? And what's changed? And frankly, at the beginning of the first 10-year plan, we were not living in the recession conditions that we're living now. And quite frankly, that is one of the greatest contributors to what's different now in this community than it was 10 years ago. People can simply cannot afford their housing in the ways that they were able to afford it in the past, and that has significantly impacted particularly family, everyone, but particularly families with children. And I think we all have an understanding that when a child has instability in their home life, they are not going to school. If they're going to school, they are not in the best condition to be able to learn, and that then sets us all up on a trajectory of generational poverty, lack of self-sufficiency, and lack, frankly, of community well-being for all of us. The second factor that changed since we did the first 10-year plan was, frankly, this ongoing wars that we find ourselves in. And unprecedented numbers of our veterans are coming back into this community. They left this community to serve in our armed forces. They've come back to this community and find themselves unable to house themselves and their families, unable to find work that allows them to be self-sufficient. And that was not the case 10 years ago, and it thus has called upon us to do some different things and think differently about our services investments that Steve spoke to. So with these things that have changed and the, what we've learned from the hard work of the past 10-year plan, we engaged in a discussion about what things needed to look like as we moved forward, and not even for the next 10 years, but the next 20. And frankly, I think it's just good practice, right? We do these plans, and sometimes they end up sitting on the shelf. This has been a living, breathing plan, and we continue to make it a living, breathing plan through efforts such as this reset. I just want to let you know what some of the statistics are right now in terms of the need. More than 1,700 people right now sleep outside in our community. Those are children under the age of 5. There are teenagers who are unaccompanied by any adult or family, and they are single men and women. And I want to speak particularly to the plight of women who are on the street. There is an exceptional and unique exposure to violence that is unique to the status of being a woman. Both on the streets, many times because of experience with domestic violence initially that led them to homelessness, and then while on the streets, they are particularly vulnerable to being preyed upon, sexual assault, and other forms of violence. This is unacceptable, I think, within our community where we say we care about the common good and care about our neighbors. But over 1,700 of us are sleeping on the streets every night in Portland. Nearly half of us who are sleeping on the street are people of color. And that is far, far in excess the numbers of us in our general population. Again, this is a challenge that we cannot let simply go by and wait for hope for things to get better. 3,000 children in Multnomah County are homeless at any point in time. And again, I think both to be appalled by the statistic, but also to know that the large numbers of those children are still going to school. And that speaks to the caring and the resiliency of their parents who know that education is the way for their children out of poverty and are doing everything they can do to make sure those children get and stay in school. And then finally, as Steve referenced, we have had a lot of success in getting people into housing and stabilizing them in housing, but they are incredibly rent burdened. So we have to look at the economic underpinnings of this. We can get people into housing and get them stable, but they will be paying much more than 30% of their income on a monthly basis to preserve that housing. And I think that calls into question our discussions as government elected officials around economic development, what that looks like, and how that really impacts on a human level, development of human capital. So in closing, I want to say the county is very committed to this plan. We are very committed to our partnership amongst the jurisdictions. It has not been easy for us to jump jurisdictional boundaries, to look at where we have our sacred cows on each of our various entities and locations, but we've experienced enough success that I believe this plan will be the guidepost that will take us to the next step in our development as cross jurisdictions, as communities, not the city, the county, home forward, but our community. What is our investment? How will we use it? And how will we do that in a way that is most efficient and most effective for the results that we want to see? So thank you.
Tracy?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. And Tracy Manning, Director of the Portland Housing Bureau. So despite the tough economic conditions, the wars, the things that have challenged us, we're mostly here with good news. And that is what we learned with our partners over this past year is, in fact, we do know what works. Portland is nationally recognized for the work that we've done in homelessness, and that's for a couple of reasons. One is our really tremendous community partners, the community-based organizations that do the work,
business partners, faith-based partners, and others. They sat on the steering committee with us. Some of them are here today. And the other tremendous thing we have going for us is the ongoing commitment of our elected officials, really also unprecedented and historic, that have been willing to tackle this injustice head on. So as you've heard, pretty simple conclusion, housing is the foundation of a person's success, achieving good health, a good education, employment. It provides safety and dignity off the street for a person living with mental illness or recovering from addiction so they can maintain their health, participate, and contribute to their communities. Homelessness and poverty also, we've learned pretty clearly, impact people of color in greater numbers. What this plan does explicitly, that the first plan frankly did not, was acknowledge the disparity and pledge and direct our actions to be accountable to changing it. So, quite simply, what you have here is a recommendation from our steering committee to adopt this plan for our community and to focus our efforts in the following ways. One of the things is recognizing that we do make a choice about who we serve first, and we recommend that we direct our resources to first serve people that are most vulnerable on the streets. And I think Mary really did a tremendous job of addressing this, but those priority populations include families with children, unaccompanied youth, adults living with disabilities, women, and our veterans. Another really important thing we learned in the first plan is how much more it takes than housing to permanently end someone's homelessness, but also, again, that we have those resources and that those partners willing to be at the table with us. The steering committee included members of our public safety community, of the healthcare community, folks from domestic violence, and a lot of others. So this plan directs us to create actions around housing, but also around income and benefits, around healthcare, survival and emergency services, access to services, and as both of my partners have addressed, systems coordination. And I think that's the thing that to me and to all of us is really exciting about this plan. We sit here as three jurisdictions. We're here today. We're going to the Multnomah County Commission tomorrow and the Home Forward Board of Commissioners on Tuesday. With an opportunity and really the beginnings of a plan to align what each jurisdiction does, to leverage our resources and what we do best to solve the problem together. And it's with a great deal of intentionality that we really want to model that solution. The plan also acknowledges the tremendous strength of our community partners. We've got nonprofits that work creatively and strategically. They're meeting people where they're at, those families, people living with mental illness, recognizing the unique opportunities that each person has to return home. And this plan specifically includes, and we've mentioned it a couple times, but it was a real important outcome, is to have a bigger tent and to strategically include and listen to old and new partners among the public, but also philanthropic communities, business community, PBA was with us at the table, faith community also, and of course the nonprofit sector. So despite what you've heard about the economy and you know, we know what our current budget realities are, we do have these great opportunities to leverage each other's work. We've got opportunities afforded us by the Affordable Care Act and Oregon's healthcare transformation that I think are really going to change the outcomes for the people that we want to serve, because ultimately I'm not really here to build housing units. I'm here because of the outcomes for the people that will live in those units. So all that said, the action that we're asking you to take today is to adopt a home for everybody, for everyone. And to direct the collective efforts of the city, the county, and Home Forward, along with our outstanding strategic community-based partners, to end homelessness for individuals and families in Multnomah County. In adopting the plan, you further direct us to bring back to you a recommendation for governance structure to oversee the work of a home for everyone. and create an action plan with measurable outcomes to guide our work. Through these efforts, we will make positive strides to ensure a home for everyone. Thank you very much, and happy to take any questions you might have.
Questions for our panel? Anyone? Thank you. Mr., do you have others that you want to call in particular, or do we take the sign-up sheet from there?
Public testimony.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Carl, you have some folks signed up to testify?
Yes. I had one sign-up sheet for both items. Did you want me to read the title to the second item? Or
you want to just do the first item.
306. First. Okay. I have four people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Joe Walsh, Lightning, and Mary Ng.
Morning. Joe, you're first.
My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice and also the Oregon Progressive Party. Our concern is that you spend too much time patting yourselves on the back. You have done a lot of good things. Stop patting yourselves on the backs when you have 1,700 people living on the street. That's unacceptable after 10 years. You only have 2 years left in a 10-year plan. And you have 1,700 people freezing to death. Hungry, children, veterans. But you pat yourself on the back. It's very annoying. I see people on the street all the time. You cannot come into this building without seeing them. But the administrators pat themselves on the back. We have this wonderful plan. We have just met. We have new stuff we're going to do. We heard that 10 years ago. Ask the people that you serve what they need. Stop using professionals. Stop using administrators to decide what's going on the streets. Ask the people on the streets, what is it that you need? How can we help you? All of your committees should have a predominance of people that are suffering so they can tell you, because it's very complicated and we all know that. It's not one building that we can put people in. We have mental illness. We have alcoholism. We have drug use. We have people that want to live on the street, which is amazing to me. But it's true. Some people want to stay on the street. You have to ask them what they want. And don't be afraid to fail. If you fail, you learn. Don't do that anymore. Failure is something that can really lift you up. So I congratulate what you do. You spent a lot of time, a lot of money, and I'm proud of that. It's not enough. It's not enough. And we're going through a budget crisis that this programs are going to suffer unless you decide you're not going to do that. You're going to figure out, where can I get money? If you can spend $5 million on fluoride, spend more $5 million on the people that are on the streets. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Good morning.
Morning. My name is Lightning. The framework, A Home for Everyone, a united community plan to end homelessness in Portland, Multnomah County. In my opinion, this is a very creative, innovative, very detailed plan to end homelessness in Portland, Multnomah County. I look forward to your implementation process. I'm sorry. If I may add a few suggestions to your overall plan, due to the fact there is a shortage of affordable housing in our community, I would like to see more input from various real estate developers on creating ways of adding more affordable housing to end homelessness. Ending homelessness in Portland, Multnomah County not only improves the lives of the homeless, but also creates positive growth for all the people and businesses throughout the city. A hypothetical. If we have 1,500 people currently living on the streets to end homelessness, would we first need 1,500 units available, which rent for approximately $800 per month, which would be a yearly rental amount of $9,600 per person? Total cost for 1,500 people on a yearly basis would be $14,400,000. Now, if we do nothing, our overtime for police, fire, and medical will skyrocket, along with other social services, and could easily exceed the $14 million. And although we still have not ended homelessness, and 1,500 people still remain on the streets, I am not suggesting that under current conditions that police, fire, medical, and other social services overtime is not reasonable. I would like to see more data provided to understand the overtime costs associated to ending homelessness. To end homelessness in Portland, Multnomah County, we need to create ways to prevent bad outcomes rather than paying more to fix them later. Thank you.
Mayor, can I just make one comment?
Please.
Enlightening.
Yes.
As always, very thoughtful testimony. Thank you. And you mentioned we got to bring the developers into the conversation. And
yes.
I would just note for the record that there's two pieces of legislation that are being debated in Salem as we speak that address the issue you've raised.
Yes.
One is the Speaker's bill, which would reduce barriers to people using Section 8 vouchers, the 8,000 voucher holders in our community. And that's run into a little bit of interference. So if you care about that, I think we ought to let our voices be heard. It's a legislative priority of the city of Portland, but it's going to be tough going. And the second bill that is getting a hearing and a debate is whether we should lift the preemption and allow cities and counties to decide whether to implement inclusionary zoning. And inclusionary zoning is another tool which can be used to make sure that there are some affordable units in new development. So those are two concrete ways that if people share your interest in looking at what the development community can do, or property owners can do, these are two reform measures which I think would go a long way to addressing some of your concerns.
And if I might add, basically the developers, we need to have more of a mindset that if you add one unit that, say, is for condominium use, higher end, we still need to figure out ways to replace the more affordable housing units. And we need to create a system, possibly when the developers are doing, say, condominium projects and or new apartment building projects, to where they understand from the get-go that we can attach maybe some type of incentive agreement to their projects, that they will basically upon the sales possibly refer 1% of overall sales of that project to a general fund, which would also help the homeless community. And those are things that I think a lot of the development community will be very open to doing, because the cost of that is, say, a 7% fee on a sale of a high-end condominium would be reduced down to a 6% fee. The brokerage community still gets 6%. We get 1%, which is applied to that general fund, which takes care of the homelessness in the city. And I think the development community will be very open to that, because it costs them no more money. It benefits them, and it benefits the city all at the same time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Council.
You have to push the button there, Mary. There you go.
There we are. Okay, thank you. I wanted to tell you about Mary Catherine Strubel.
Just put your name into the record.
Oh, Mary Eng. Mary Catherine Strubel is the mother of a pastor Strubel in my hometown in Nashville, and they did very successful work with a program they called Room at the Inn. Sadly, Father Strubel's mother was murdered on her way to the soup kitchen to deliver a sack of potatoes, and she was found knifed to death in her trunk, and I saw her in her open casket in a blue dress. It was a very powerful impact on my childhood, because we had such an incredible homeless problem there. I want you to know that the public safety issues that we face now with so many murders, homicides, drive-by shootings are very concerning to me. I don't go out at night anymore at all for anything, including libraries or music functions or things I would like. I know for sure we have had a rampant bedbug problem in some of our Section 8 housing, and that lack of protection of consumer safety will intermesh with issues of housing if we don't have firm measures for transparency control. I also wanted to bring forward again issues on human trafficking and sex industries. I just registered for some excellent courses at PCC with a history teacher there, Armentrout. But I have to walk by about four sex industries. One of them is called Assets. They hold live nude auditions daily. They offer $2 microbrews. And this assault of sex-based industries in an area where there's a lot of development with the district around 82nd, but I'm hoping we can have more personal safety for the 18-year-old girls who might be there going to the community college.